Hello, everyone. I am Jason Dinges. This is Lost Rhetoric, a dim space for light hearts where we discuss all manner of odd. Thank you for joining me. Thank you to all return listeners. And thank you to any new listeners that might be out there. I am thrilled to have you. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This week, Matt Whitman is back. You might remember him from episode 19, where we discussed Bill Cooper and his conspiracies and his life. It was a great episode. I highly recommend going back and checking that one out. But tonight's episode is kind of an extension of Bill Cooper because we're going to be talking the Dulce Wars that Bill Cooper seemed to be privy to and he mentioned in his writings. He was involved somehow. It's still sketchy to me on exactly how he was involved, but maybe we'll get into it a little bit more tonight. We'll get down to the bottom of it. But yeah, tonight we're talking the human alien battle, the underground battle that apparently happened in 1979 in Dulce, New Mexico. So stick around for that. But first, let's talk about last week's episode. Had Grace Bigler back on. We talked about the life of Jack Parsons, who was a wild-ass rocket scientist and occultist, heavily involved in Thelema, the Aleister Crowley religion, and very innovative in rocketry, started jet propulsion laboratories. He died very young. He had a pretty crazy life. We talked about him and her experiences with Thelema, her personal experiences. So go back and check that out if you haven't. Episode 37, it's really, really good in my opinion. And when you listen, if you haven't already, give a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you can leave a rating and a review. It really helps the show be more visible. It helps get on the radar for people who are looking for new podcasts, you know? So any rating review just helps me out a lot. It helps the show out a lot, and I would greatly appreciate it. So definitely feel free to do that. So who listened to that last episode the most? Let's get into the top five. I haven't done this in a while, but there was a big tie for fifth place, a six-way tie, and I'm just going to rattle them off real quick here. Washington, Virginia, back in the top five. Thompson, Manitoba, Canada. Thank you, Thompson. Santa Fe, New Mexico. Still in the top five. St. Paul, Minnesota. Thank you, St. Paul, and welcome back. Berkeley, California. I think it's your first time in the top five. And rounding out this big tie at the fifth position, Tigard, Oregon. You're back. Thank you all for listening. Two-way tie for fourth place. Richmond, Virginia. Still here in the top five. And Minneapolis, Minnesota. So thank you both for listening. Number three, Spokane, Washington. Out of nowhere. I don't think Spokane's ever been in the top five, but thank you, Spokane. Number two, Beaverton, Oregon. Still holding strong. Really, really become a mainstay here in the top three. And number one, back on top, Portland, Oregon. Thank you so much, Portland, for always having my back. I really appreciate it. And thank you all for listening, as always. And if you ever want to get in touch with a fella like me, it's pretty easy. You can email me, lostrhetoricpodcast@gmail.com. I would be happy to talk to you. You can find me on Instagram, @lostrhetoricpodcast. I've been posting more often, trying to engage. It's the only social media I have, so it's kind of my only outlet. So find me on there. And write me if you want on there. Send me a message. Also, a quick update. I went on my Buzzsprout page, which is the link I always post. It's where the RSS feed is, and it's where all my show notes are. And I finally updated it to be, I guess, normal, because I've been posting links, and none of them have actually been clickable links. and I didn't really know that. So I went in and made every single link that I posted clickable. So when you read the show notes now, it's just everything is just a click away, you know? Just click, click everything, and boom, you're there. There's links to my Instagram, to the Spotify playlists, to all things related to my guest and any articles I want to post regarding the topic. All just a click away now because I finally caught up with the times. I also added show chapters on the Buzzsprout page. So you can just click a section of the show and go straight to it. It's pretty simple. It's usually just, you know, the greetings intro, the top five, the what I'm listening to, the exhumed excerpts, then the discussion, then the outro. That's it for the most part. If you want to skip all the intro stuff, you can just go right to the discussion now. So that's pretty cool. So I did that. Yeah, I think you can only really see that stuff on the Buzzsprout page. I don't think it really translates. Hopefully all the links and everything transfer over to like Apple Podcasts and Spotify and Stitcher and all that stuff. If they don't, let me know. But hopefully everything's just a lot easier for you guys to check out all the stuff that I want to share with you. But yeah, that's new and I'm very proud of myself. So hopefully you enjoy that. So what am I listening to this week? A band out of the Bay that I've been listening to for a while called Nopes. That's N-O-P-E-S. Has a new album out on Magnetic Eye Records called Bjork. That's Bjork, spelled with a D. pretty fucking funny album title. They're like noisy, angular punk. I've read a couple of reviews and the word angular always comes up. And it kind of makes sense. But yeah, you know, they're really good band, a lot of energy. So check out Nopes, Bjork. They're kind of a band I think Fred Armisen would like, you know, if that makes any sense to you. Another band that I've been listening to is Brainiac. And speaking of Fred Armisen, he's in the documentary that I watched about Brainiac called Transmissions After Zero. I knew nothing about this band, but I like watching music documentaries, and this band's actually really good. They were around in the early to late 90s, and they're alternative. I would say they're like the definition of whatever alternative was supposed to be. They're experimental rock and roll. They did whatever the fuck they wanted because they could. They were that talented, but they put a lot of effects on the vocals. They just were distorted. They had crazy synth. They were just off the wall musicians, off the wall time signatures, but they, you know, they were groovy at times. They were just, they did whatever they wanted, man. They were really good band and influenced a lot of people, I'm sure, like Nopes. I could see how that could be a reality. But yeah, they used to run with the likes of like Jesus Lizard and Shellac and stuff like that. They're kind of in that camp. But, you know, they did crazy tours with Beck, and I think Rage Against the Machine wanted to tour with them. And, you know, the dude from Mars Volta and At the Drive-In, the singer, is in the documentary. So they had influence on all these crazy experimental musicians of the time. And, you know, I didn't know shit about them. So listen to Brainiac and check out the documentary Transmissions After Zero. It's a good film. Oryx from Denver. Heavy-ass sludge doom metal band from Denver. I've known about them for a long time, but I'd never really listened to them. I finally started listening to them, just no album in particular. I know they have a new single out. I think they got a new album coming down the pike here, but really good, really heavy, really brutal. You know, if you're wearing a bullet belt and all black and got long hair, possibly dreads, you're gonna like this band. Oryx is a great name too. O-R-Y-X. I love that fucking name. Dave Angelini, you might know him from this show. He's been on about three times, I think, now. His band, Heavy Medical, has a new recording called Anxiety and Frustration. It clocks in at about 3 minutes, I think just under 3 minutes. Yeah, man, they're great. They're just super succinct, kind of noise rock with like a power violence aesthetic. It's just all angst and aggression. They're great. So check out Heavy Medical. I'm going to post a link to their Bandcamp. You can check it out. And the last thing I've been listening to is kind of a twofer. Charlie Crockett, who I've mentioned on the show before, a country musician whose voice and songs I've come to appreciate. He has a new tribute album called 10 for Slim. Charlie Crockett sings James Hand. And, you know, it's just really great old school traditional country from Texas. And that got me listening to James Hand, who the tribute album is for, and he is excellent. So, yeah, James Hand and Charlie Crockett, if you're into that old school country feeling, check it out. And that is what I have been listening to. So let's get into the exhumed excerpts from the Tomb of the Promulgated. This week, I got a little story from, I forgot the date. January 1976 issue of the APRO Bulletin, which the APRO Bulletin is going to come up a little bit tonight because, who are we talking about again? Oh yeah, the Dulce Wars. They reported on this stuff. It was around this time. The Lorenzans were definitely reporting on what was going on in Dulce. But before we get into that, let's read this article here called the headline is Close Encounter in Canada. Here we go. Robert Suffern of rural Brainbridge, Ontario, Canada, is another UFO witness who, if he had to do it all over again, would never have reported what he saw on the 7th of October, 1975. He now says that he received so many visitors and telephone calls from the curious that they had to leave the house in order to enjoy a quiet meal. Field investigator Henry McKay of Agincourt forwarded the following report. At about 8:30 p.m., Suffern received a call from his sister Shirley, who lives about 300 yards northeast of his home. She told him it looked as if his barn was on fire. Suffern went out and at first saw nothing, but then he heard the cattle moving about. He went in and told his sister he couldn't go out again as he was looking after his six-week-old baby. His sister then came down to the house and stayed with the child while he took the car, or her car, and went to the barn. However, he saw nothing, so he drove out to the driveway, down the road, then turned on a side road. At that point, Suffern saw an object in the middle of the road. He said it was the color of the dull side of aluminum foil, and the surface appeared irregular and, quote, crinkled, unquote. He heard no sound other than that of the engine of his car and only viewed the object momentarily, for it took off straight up at high speed and disappeared into the night. There were no lights on the object, which was shaped like a disc sitting on a half disc with a squat, stubby protuberance underneath. Suffern then turned the car around and started for his home, turning onto 3 Mile Lake Road, whereupon he saw a, quote, thing. It, quote unquote, was on the grassy shoulder of the road and about to cross from Suffern's right to the left. It suddenly pivoted and turned toward the pasture, reached up with its hands, grabbed the fence post, and vaulted over with no effort. The figure appeared to be short with very broad shoulders, which seemed to be out of proportion with the rest of its body, and the movements were similar to those of an ape or midget, and very agile. The head portion was covered with a globe, and Suffern couldn't detect any details of a face. The suit was silver in color, a one-piece affair, and the globe was white or light in color. Suffern then returned home and put the children to bed. His wife was out for the evening. The television was on, and suddenly the sound stopped. When he looked at the screen, it had blacked out and stayed off for several seconds. He went to the door, and out behind the barn in the pasture, he saw an orange-colored fluorescent light, which did not flash. It headed out over 3 Mile Lake, appearing to follow the contour of the land. Mr. McKay, who has been engaged in UFO research for 10 years, considers Suffern to be reliable and thinks that he is telling what he saw in a straightforward manner. I love how APRO always kind of does that character witness at the end of their article. Sometimes they always say they seem of sound mind and basically not batshit. And if they are batshit, they kind of say it. So I love that about the articles. But yeah, that's a crazy story, man. Seeing the UFO going straight up and then seeing that creature running like that and doing kind of the Forrest Gump over the fence, you know? Pretty wild. But yeah, that's the exhumed excerpt for the night. I hope you enjoy it. That is, you know, I always enjoy exhuming these old articles and stories and giving them a little bit of fresh air. So I hope, yeah, you do too. So let's get into the episode. I'm going to talk to Matt Whitman. Haven't done it yet. I don't know what's going to happen, as usual. So here we go. Here's me and Matt talking Dulce, New Mexico. Matt.
Jason, I'd like to open up this podcast by, instead of doing the normal small talk bullshit, I wonder if you'd indulge me to read from the Book of Revelations to you.
Yeah, I'll indulge you for sure.
Thank you. So this is from Revelations, book 6, chapter 8, or is it chapter 6, verse 8? It's been a while. I looked and beheld a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and hell followed with him, and power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth, to kill with sword and with hunger, and with death, and with the beasts of the earth. Now, Jason Dinges, host of the Lost Rhetoric podcast, I ask you, what is the fourth part of the earth?
Man, the fourth part of the earth.
What are the first three parts?
Like water and air and fire.
No, you're
land,
getting, no, you're getting into
land.
Yeah, I'm land.
Not, I guess I was getting into elements there, huh?
Yeah, those are elements. You could very easily slip into carnal sins as well if you're not careful.
So what's the fourth?
Could it be underground?
Yes.
Is that the fourth part of the earth?
Yes.
Well, I think you're gonna find out tonight.
I hope we do, because now I really need to know. I have to know. Everyone has to know. You set us up like that. My God. I hope you deliver.
Well, yeah. So we are, of course, I mentioned at the very beginning of that quotation from Revelations, the King James Bible version of the Bible, of course. Revelations,
of course,
chapter 6, of course, the only true word of God, written, of course, by the vessel of Christian holiness himself, King James. So Revelations chapter 6, verse 8, I looked and beheld a pale horse. Now, I've adjusted that for syntax, but this is the passage from which Bill Cooper, who we discussed in our last episode, got the title of his classic.
That's right. Yeah. Bill Cooper, the man himself.
Oh yeah. The myth, the legend, the coop.
Now, hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Exactly.
That's what we did in episode 19. We hung out with Mr. Cooper hard.
Is it too late to rename that episode?
Oh shit. I probably should. Yeah. What did I call it? Behold a pale white conspiracy theorist is what I called
it. Yeah.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, but now that we know how good it could have been, it's kind of dog shit.
It's never too late. I can just, no one's gonna notice, Matt, if I did it.
I'll tell you that.
Well,
I don't know, dude. You could face a Twitter firestorm.
Oh, yeah. If I had Twitter, maybe. Mm-hmm. Well, tonight I mentioned in the intro, this episode is a bit of an extension of Bill Cooper, because what we're talking about in the Dulce Wars, or I've heard it referenced to as the alien human battle of Dulce. That's something that Bill Cooper claimed to have witnessed, right? He was there or a part of it, or a part of strategizing the attack or some shit.
Well, so there were, I think there were a few different nodes from our last discussion that sort of intersected with the Dulce mystery. And that's, I think, why we came back to it tonight, is because it kept coming up. And it's such a fascinating, it's such a fascinating subset of these paranormal and alien things. It's kind of honestly kind of like right at the heart of everything. I mean, we're kind of talking about basically like downtown, like military industrial alien complex, like the hub of everything, the CBD. Here in Dulce, you know, because we're talking about I was just looking at the a cross section of the supposed facility underneath Dulce, New Mexico, which is, as we know, is just a, you know, very small, tiny
town on the Colorado border, population just under 3,000 people. Mm-hmm. It's the tribal headquarters of the, I'm going to butcher it maybe, but the Jicarilla Apache Reservation.
Dulce. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so,
everyone on in town, not everyone, but a lot of people have just seen shit, because before this whole, alien base battle that we're going to talk about tonight, which occurred in 1979, there were cattle mutilations happening in like 1976. There was a family, the Gomez family, started reporting losing cattle, and they blame the government, not aliens, for what happened to them. And they had to close down their business. They lost so many cattle. They were in business for over 100 years, and they got fucked with so bad, losing so many heads of cattle. They had to close down, and they think it was a result.
When you run the county's biggest cattle store, and the government is just fucking murking your stock. That's bad for business. That's really bad for business.
But you know, they think it was a result of something called Project Gas Buggy.
Oh shit! I'm glad you brought up Operation Gas Buggy. Let me find it here. I think the setup here is that I've read The Dulce Wars, which is, I've read the first half of it. which we discussed last time. It seems like a lifetime ago, Jason, but it was it only
pretty
last
much
year.
Was. Yeah,
truly. It was an entire presidential coup ago.
Yep.
And this is, The Dulce Wars, written by, of course, Branton.
Branton. I've got a lot of quotes. Well, not a lot of quotes, but I kept in my research, just the name Branton kept coming up as a reference. Yeah. Or as the author of whatever quote the source material came from. And I didn't know who Branton was. So that's good to clear that up in my own brain.
Well, no one knows really who Branton is. And likewise, no one really knows who Commander X is.
Right.
Commander X,
of course. That's right.
Commander X, of course, who wrote the intro, or the...
The foreword, huh?
Yes. Yes, the foreword. If I could read a little bit from Commander X's, what better time than now? This is the foreword by Commander X, who he never even really establishes what his credentials are supposed to be. He just kind of assumes that you understand that you know, because he's a commander, self-proclaimed, and is using a Roman numeral for his name, that, you know, it's, he's a very important man. So we just already assume that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he talks about, hey, you know, I started to, you know, hear about some UFO stuff in the 70s and then in the 80s and the 90s. And I was like, what's going on with this UFO stuff? And then what he says here is in the foreword to this book about the alien wars, he says, I must hedge my bets and say that I can neither confirm nor deny the validity of such tales of alien visitation. Okay. However, in the back of my mind, there does exist the fear that this could all be true. You must decide for yourself what is fiction and what is fact. So Commander X himself, not even fully on board.
Not even.
In his own words, hedging his bets.
Well, we'll get into it here in a bit, but I do know that this was so top secret that anyone involved with what happened underground in this battle we're going to talk about has to act dumb. Mm-hmm. Like they can't be forthright about what they know, because it was like above the president's head. It was above everyone's head, because it was a secret. From what I've read, it was a very secret mission that people took it upon themselves to encounter these aliens. But I know we have differing, there's a few different theories out there as to what started this war and what the war was all about. So before I get ahead of myself, you read the Dulce Wars book by Branton, forward by Commander X.
Yes.
And we already mentioned what's going on the surface in Dulce, New Mexico is very strange. There's cattle mutilations. Ranchers are getting freaked out. People are seeing lights in the sky. Project Gas Buggy happened, which was like a fracking experiment. Basically, they're trying to...
nuclear fracking.
Nuclear, yeah. And it didn't yield the results they wanted. I guess the gas radioactivity was seen as too high and they didn't continue.
So this is something that I, if you don't mind, I would very much like to put a pin in,
sure.
or at least, you know, at the very least not let get past this. So what I was fascinated to learn, like I, you know, they mentioned Operation Gas Buggy in the book, and I went and you know, they mentioned Operation Gas Buggy as it, or Branton does, I shouldn't, we know exactly who he is. Branton mentions it as being basically just some sort of shadowy, you know, government program that it was supposedly about testing things, but really it was just cover, of course, for, I think they say in here, I think Branton postulates that it was actually cover for creating the caverns underneath the earth that would then be turned into the underground facilities that would house the human, or as, and I'd like to talk about this at some point, I'm not sure where it's going to fit into our conversation because it's super fucking weird and specific, but not just the human alien alliance, but the Bavarian alien alliance.
Oh, I don't know anything about the Bavarian alliance.
There is a Bavarian alien alliance.
Great.
And apparently these friendly chocolatiers in the south of Germany have been up to no good in the literal bowels of New Mexico.
Okay, so Gas Buggy was basically just a front to blow up holes in the ground and that created the foundation of this base, or it's just more tunnels, more caverns, just a part of it kind of thing. Because
so
there's theories that this base has been there for hundreds of years. So who knows?
So
seems to be one of many blasting projects, possibly.
Possibly, sure. Rome wasn't built in a day. Neither, presumably, were these underground, super cities.
That's right.
It's certainly, you know, like Rome or any city or, you know, anywhere anybody lives, these things evolve over time. So I actually have not gotten as deep into, the lore behind Dulce as I think you have. Mm-hmm. I'm essentially ignorant of any of this Dulce stuff besides just kind of what came up in our conversation last time.
Okay.
And my, one of the reasons I think it came up was, my faint recollection of what was perhaps a dream and what was maybe not while I was taking a nap one time about Bill Cooper's experience descending into this subterranean lair and watching, you know, obviously big tough Marines and, you know, big old strong aliens duke it out and with lasers or whatever. And was this real or was this some figment of my imagination? But reading through this book, which is, apparently the sort of, you know, the Bible of, for background on the Dulce Wars, that fight between gray aliens and humans did happen.
Mm-hmm. It most certainly did. And there's, like I already kind of alluded to, there's a few ideas as to how and I guess why it happened. But let's start. I mean, first off, I want to throw this out there because I read this somewhere, but they call this the Tale of the Dumb, and that's an acronym, which is Deep Underground Military Base.
And who calls it that?
Tale of the Dumb Beneath Dulce, New Mexico. I forget the exact source. I have it written down here. I have a link in my notes, but I didn't write it. I didn't put a footnote beside it.
So from a branding perspective, I don't even really think that's as bad as you think, because obviously you've got Dumbo in Brooklyn, which is doing phenomenally. So I don't see any reason why this place ultimately couldn't be turned into condos.
Why not?
Mm-hmm.
You said you didn't really get into too much into the actual battle that eventually happens. We know there's a base.
Yeah.
We know there is a massive underground shared base between basically many species of alien. The amount is up for debate. But it's, let's just say grays.
Mm-hmm.
It's mm-hmm. pretty much 7-foot grays seems to be the kind of consensus from the sources that I've read. 7-foot gray aliens. And I've also read there were friendly white aliens and the grays not so friendly, which is
are you talking about, when you say white aliens, are you talking about the Nordics?
Possibly. I didn't read the word Nordics, but okay. I just read white aliens, but Nordics could definitely be,
because I mean,
who was down there?
So there are,
a lot of aliens were down there, apparently. Some working and doing their experiments and studies and research, and some were apparently just, you know, invited as guests and kind of hanging out and stuff. Because this is just a big free-for-all, man. This is an interplanetary, interdimensional hangout spot, apparently. It's like a fucking 7-story... There's 7 levels to this place.
Yes.
And they're doing all manner of things down there.
Absolutely. I was looking for something in this book here that was going to be extremely relevant. I'm going to have to find it. I'm going to have to find it later. Sorry for the dead air. If we could if we could get Mitzi, the producer, to just cut that out, that would be great.
Mitzi's on it. Where do you have as a jumping off point to the whistleblowing on this particular event?
Well, honestly, what the whistleblowing is, I mean, really, this is this book, which, as I was sort of clumsily trying to explain myself earlier, is all that I know about this. So you seem to have I think you haven't read the book, right?
I have not.
But you have done a bunch of independent research, basically looking into just the Dulce Wars generally.
Yes, specifically so, the battle and the folks who claim to have been a part of it.
Right. So I'm looking, I can only view this topic through the perspective that Branton provides me. So that's literally all the, that's literally, that is literally my only like window.
Okay. And a little bit of Bill Cooper. A little bit of Bill Cooper.
A little bit of Bill Cooper. Just a faint memory from my early 20s of Bill Cooper.
Well, there's an interesting, there's a guy I want to get into who has a story that is very similar to Bill Cooper's.
Benowitz?
Not Benowitz. We'll get okay. to the guy, Paul Schneider, that I'm talking about. But I do want to start with Paul Benowitz.
Oh, yes.
Because he seems to be the original guy to kind of call this whole thing out and make it public. Paul Benowitz, man, this story is, it gets a little weird because he was in 1979, he started being convinced that he was intercepting communications from alien spacecrafts outside of Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. Right. So he was really into that. He was really into getting a bunch of film. And I think he even built some devices to communicate, and he was intercepting electronic transmissions from aliens. So he was just around Albuquerque and around Kirtland Air Force Base there and just investigating. And then a little bit after that, and the reason why is a bit of there's a little bit of contention, I guess, as to why he started believing what he started to believe, which is there was a massive underground base in Dulce.
May I give you a note on Benowitz from mm-hmm. Branton?
Sure. Yes, please.
Okay. So this is actually a parenthetical note that Branton very helpfully includes in his text, which mm-hmm. Of which there are hundreds. And okay. this is honestly a short one.
Okay.
But it's quite interesting. Note, Benowitz actually stated that he interrogated the alien collective via a computer/radio/video link with an alien computer terminal by tapping into the, oh, wow, his, okay, he is a really bad writer. Sorry. So he says tapping in, which is hyphenated, and then to the alien ship to base. When it should, it's just an absurd typo. This is clearly self-edited.
So you know it's quality. It's quality. You know.
I'm gonna start over. I think I'm compelling enough of a reader that I can get away with that.
Okay.
Benowitz actually stated that he interrogated the alien collective via a computer/radio/video link with an alien computer terminal by tapping into the alien's ship-to-base communications frequency and using a type of hexadecimal mathematical code to break the alien encryption. He first discovered the signals using specialized equipment he had developed, and later concluded that these signals were also being used to influence abductees who had been given electronic mind control implants. Branton.
So says Branton. Yeah, that's basically what I heard too, is he met an abductee and she told him basically what you kind of just said, Her name is Myrna Hansen.
My dog's name is Myrna.
Really?
Yeah.
Man,
she's
right here. It's all coming together. Hey, Myrna. Myrna Hansen claimed that her and her young son had seen a UFO near Cimarron in northeastern New Mexico, and that they had, at that point, had seen, they found out later under hypnosis, because they started hypnotizing Myrna to get more information out of her.
As one does.
Yeah. And they extracted out of her this guy, Dr. Sprinkle, who is in cahoots with Benowitz. That was his name, Dr. Sprinkle.
Fuck. I knew a guy growing up named Judge Sprinkle.
See, man, this is, man, you're just tied. Yeah. You're going to be familiar with everyone in this story.
He's an actual judge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe this guy's an actual doctor. Let's
hopefully.
Let's only hope. But
so when you say that, what do you mean that they pulled this out of her under hypnotic regression? That he was somebody? You saying that they pulled out the memory, or that like this person existed, or that this Dr. Sprinkle was some sort of being that was inside them? I'm not sure I understand.
Well, they found out about Myrna and her UFO sighting, and with her permission, Dr. Sprinkle began hypnotizing her. And over
Dr. Sprinkle is the hypnotist.
Yes.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Yes.
Okay. And over a 3-month period, Benowitz and Sprinkle got a lot of info from Myrna that she had seen several UFOs that day. The initial account she told them about, but she had seen cattle being abducted, and that her and her son had also been abducted and taken to a secret underground base where they saw the cattle being mutilated and drained of their blood. And they saw vats with a bunch of human body parts in them. And then she also said, what you already mentioned, that implants were placed in their bodies, and that the aliens could control their minds through these devices. And Benowitz believed all of this stuff. And he continued filming, researching, and I guess sending out his signals and breaking codes and doing all this stuff. And he actually wrote his mission, and it's called Project Beta. And I think you can still get a hold of it somehow. But people who have seen the film and heard the tapes of what he captured said that there's no doubt that he was like getting real phenomena, you know. But the question is, was it real? Because I've read there was a pretty massive disinformation effort specifically aimed at Benowitz or Benowitz. It's got to be Benowitz, you think? I've been saying Benowitz. Let's just go with that.
But anything you want, baby.
But apparently there were a couple agents, I guess you would call them, that have admitted to kind of fucking with Benowitz's brain a little bit to get him off of the Kirtland Air Force Base thing that he was, you know, like his original sightings and transmission decoding and shit. It seems like he may have been on to something, and they wanted to distract him. So they came up with this underground base theory to get his brain all fucking riled up. So in this disinformation theory that I'm throwing out right now, the Dulce base isn't real, according to the Air Force. And they sent agents out to tell Benowitz that it was real, and he ate it all up. And that's what he's devoted a lot of his a good portion of his life to, is figuring out this base.
So here's my take on the Benowitz saga. This is just based on this bit that Branton tells us about. To the extent that Branton can be trusted as a reliable narrator for Benowitz's story. But this is, Benowitz actually stated that he interrogated the alien collective via computer radio video link with an alien computer terminal by tapping into the alien shift to base communication frequency, and as you said, hacking. This is basically, according to Branton and presumably Benowitz, he was able to, much like Jeff Goldblum in Independence Day, basically just take a fucking like, you know, corrupted cartridge of NBA Jam and like put it into a, you know, a receptacle in the alien ship and just like, you know, jam up their whole thing.
Right.
Which seems like a little bit as implausible now as it did when we all watched that movie.
Right.
Like, oh, you can just hack aliens? Like, how yeah. are we doing? What are we doing? We're hacking aliens in the 80s by like, by putting like, we're taking our dial up, like phones that have the curly fucking string and putting them onto the, like the, those, you know, little Atari patches so mm-hmm. that it can go in, you know, can go into the, you know, the same fucking, you know, server that they're playing, you know, that Fred Savage movie on. It, like, give me a break.
It is a big leap of faith you got to take there to believe.
But what it, but so here's, but it, what it gives me the vibes of, is somebody close to me who I won't obviously name, but I hope they may appreciate that I use this story, had a manic episode, a dozen years ago or so, whatever, in which they, were convinced that from their dorm room, and on their computer, they had made contact with, I think, like the Jizza and like Ghostface Killa of Wu-Tang Clan. Redman. Okay. It was Redman.
Oh, Redman. Okay, I believe that.
Yeah, no, he's constantly out on the internet. but they had made contact with Redman and the rest of his crew up in Shaolin, up in Staten Island, right? Mm-hmm. Up in New York. And
Redman's a Jersey guy.
Okay.
He runs with that crew, obviously. But continue, please.
Thank you. Never let a bit of insignificant trivia get in the way of a good story, right?
I just can't let it slide.
No. So they're in touch with Redman and their friends, you know, and their crew online, and Redman is super stoked about, you know, getting this person that I know up to Shaolin to record, because like they're the next sensation. And I was like, my goodness, how did you connect with Redman through the internet? And they were like, I was just rapping into my computer. And Redman was like, he just like tuned in. Huh. And was like, this is great. You think that's how I got hooked up with Redman. And this person like is very close and near and dear to me and is doing much better now, but was mm-hmm. like literally like living through this reality in mm-hmm. which they had been rapping into their computer and Redman had, had just dialed in and said, hey, in. I'm going to pluck you out of obscurity and take wow. you on this wild adventure.
Wow.
This shit about Benevitz hacking into an alien computer and using a hexadecimal mathematical code, breaking alien encryption, and then interrogating an alien collective via a computer/radio/video link gives me exactly the same vibes.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe your friend was using the Benevitz method.
may have been.
Maybe Benevitz was over there rapping and, yeah, and he somehow communicated with them via some 1979 version of Zoom.
Possibly.
Well, Benevitz didn't end up as well off as your friend because he went downhill. This ruined him, man. This is like, not good for Paul. He was the man that I mentioned earlier was saying that there were peaceful quote unquote whites and evil grays. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the Nordics, maybe it's another hybrid species, but
well, I think it would be helpful maybe to establish, like, have you done this on other episodes? Is this part of the canon? Like, have you established the various known alien species?
Not specifically, but you can easily find that things. I only talk about them when they come up, the specific ones, you know.
Right. But, no, I just mean, but I mean, I think that there are like there are species in this like there are specific species that play in this sort of lore, in this specific lore. You do have the Greys, you do have the you have the Nordics, I believe, who I think may be interchangeable with the Whites. The Draconians as well show up. I don't know if that showed up in your research, but it definitely shows up in this book.
That one I didn't really come up with the Draconians. And
okay.
What I got was a lot of numbers instead of names in terms of how many were down there. Depending on the source, the number is different. And whether they were benevolent or why am I trying to say those words, Matt?
I know. I wish you could. I could listen to an hour of that just alone.
I finally got it out. But yeah, that's up for debate too. But yeah, yes. Benevitz was saying that the Greys were responsible for the cattle mutilations and the human abductions. But, you know, we've mentioned this before because of Bill Cooper. The U.S. apparently did have a treaty with these Greys that, who was it, Eisenhower signed?
It was Eisenhower who,
It was either Truman. Eisenhower or Truman. I think it was
Truman. It was Truman. It was immediately after World War II. Mm-hmm. And he flew from Los Angeles to Palm Springs, or from Palm Springs to
I think he went from I think he went from California to Florida to sign this treaty.
Yeah,
disappeared like for a few days.
And this is the treaty that regulates the extent to which the Greys are allowed to abduct and perform medical experiments on humans, which of course, obviously the assumption is there that, you know, that that Truman or, you know, the United States government, as controlled by the Bavarians, as we'll find out, has sold humanity out to this alien race, right? It's been like, yeah, shit. Okay. I guess you can abduct a certain amount of them.
Some of us. But, you know, the whole treaty is, and then once again, the story, it varies depending on the source, but they're in cahoots with the Greys. He's like, yeah, take some of us, do whatever you want with us. But ultimately, we're going to work together, but we're kind of in control here. You know, it's our planet kind of thing. But down in Dulce, apparently the vibe is the Greys are about to break this treaty, and they have a whole plan. They're just using Earthlings, and they are going to take over. That's their whole plan, is like, yeah, we'll play nice, we'll sign this fucking treaty, whatever, but we're coming for you. We're just not going to tell you that.
Well,
shrewd
and they very shrewd move. That is some like Brutus the Barber Beefcake style, like fucking.
I love Brutus the Barber.
The political.
I love Brutus the Barber Beefcake, but every time I hear his name, I laugh. It's like,
well, yeah, no, he's an absurd character, you know.
Man, I loved him growing up too. I love that character.
Yeah. He was just great a barber wrestler with a mullet. Yeah, and he had fucking garden shears. They were garden shears.
If you lost in one of those matches, he would cut your hair off. He'd take a piece of your hair.
Would.
Oh man, good stuff.
I think he was like single-handedly behind the trend of away from mullets, because I mean that was like his primary sort of I hate to say hide that he would take, or fur, or, you know, like a pelt that he would take from his, from his defeated opponent. And at a certain point as a wrestler, and as I've said many times privately, wrestling is culture is downstream from wrestling. what happens in wrestling is what then happens in culture. It was because of Brutus the Barber Beefcake that wrestlers stopped having mullets, and then they just kind of started going away on our college campuses and freeways, which was I think for the best.
Possibly. He definitely was a game changer and a huge influencer. Could you imagine if he was a part of this war, like just kicking a door down and just with his shears and just,
oh my god,
snipping some 7-foot gray aliens
with
knees
with
off
Roddy with with Rowdy Roddy Piper right behind him with a 2x4.
Mm. Just good. That's
or Hacksaw Jim shit. Duggan. Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I'm sorry.
Well, he had the 2x4, but why couldn't Roddy Piper have a 2x4?
I mean, I guess if he wanted to share with Hacksaw,
they could all have 2x4s.
I just thought it was lame. I always thought it was lame that they gave Hacksaw Jim Duggan a 2x4. It was like, no, he's a fucking, he should have a hacksaw. What's wrong with you?
You know, I never really thought about that.
I thought about it constantly. I was pretty- like, no, the 2x4 is the enemy of the hacksaw. Like the that's internal contradictions of Hacksaw Jim Duggan are just like, they really will drive you crazy.
You
like
just this blew my mind, man.
I dude, didn't really... this was like every night falling asleep, like in the late 80s for me.
Yeah. Now he's just going to be 2x4 Jim Duggan to me now. That's his name. But back to this Paul Benevitz.
The Benevitz connection.
The disinformation that I was alluding to earlier apparently was confirmed because a fella named Bill Moore claimed, and in the article that I read, the word confession is in quotes.
scare quotes.
That he was recruited by someone with the code name Falcon to lead Benevitz astray by giving him false information. And and he did this for 4 years. And this just led Benevitz down this Dulce base rabbit hole. And also a guy, Richard Doty, who I've mentioned in previous episodes too, apparently was a part of the disinformation efforts as well. But this all led to, so from what I understand, Benevitz was never down in the base, never saw the base, but he talked to Myrna via regressive hypnotic sessions and extracted info about it and was fully convinced that it existed and it was a cover up, and he lost his mind about it, and he actually started getting really paranoid. And then he started claiming aliens were coming through the walls of his house at night and injecting him with chemicals. And he started carrying guns, and he had knives and guns all over the place. And then he was hospitalized.
Eventually. I love a guy that wants to wield a knife against an alien.
Yeah. Yeah. You brung a knife to laser fight or a mind control fight. I don't know what they got.
you brought a knife to an I make you slap yourself fight.
I'm gonna make you stab yourself. No, that's what I'm gonna do. But yeah, he was eventually hospitalized for exhaustion, and apparently he recovered, but then he just refused to talk about it ever, and he was just kind of done with UFOs and this fucking thing in general. And he eventually died in 2003, and he's buried in Santa Fe. And
oh, no shit.
But he was the guy that kind of, from what I've read, kind of brought it to the surface. Was trying to blow the whistle on this Dulce alien human base. This underground base in 1979.
But there is some connection that he has to some sort of handler that he had from the base. Is that something that I understood?
He had. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I thought you had mentioned that. Like, there was some. Was there some suspicion that this was? What's the suspicion about the misinformation that led to Benevitz's like investment in this? Where does that misinformation come from?
Oh, it's coming from the Air Force.
Right.
And these people are saying that these like Bill Moore and Doty, they're Air Force folks saying that they are getting their information from Air Force higher ups like AFOSI folks, which is like the Air Force Office, I think, of Special Investigations. And, you know, it's so like hush hush. I mean, a guy named Falcon gave him instructions, codename Falcon.
Right.
But he claimed that Bill Moore claimed that his orders were by an AFOSI agent.
So, right. So, I mean, what this really this sounds like to me is like, again, to give you an experience from my life, a gentleman that I knew growing up, who was a few years older than me, with Down syndrome, who would ride his bike around my neighborhood. Well, actually, you know, all over town, honestly. And he loved the fucking fire department. He just thought the fire department is fucking cool, because they are. They're fucking great.
And heroes, true heroes.
Yes, unironic heroes. Even though a lot of them are right-wing assholes, but hey,
the truth still,
you guys still fucking, you guys, they you will guys save are still your cool. Life. You guys are still cool. Cause you're not, yeah, they will. And they'll slap you around a little bit and be like, hey, you fucking F word.
Yeah.
So he would ride around on his bike, and then, you know, over time, the fire department like kind of adopted him and like would, you know, give him gear and stuff. And when he would like ride his bike out to where they were hanging out and like doing their thing and like helping people. And they would like, you know, say, hey, welcome to the scene. Here's what's going on. And they really kind of like adopted him, and, you know, he loved it. You know, he was, you know, just in heaven, just being accepted by these people that he looked up to. But of course, you know, he was sort of, you know, in a sense, and I mean, I don't think in necessarily even really a predatory sense or anything like that. He was sort of a mascot. I mean, you know, which sounds gross, but like, yeah, I wish there was a better term I could come up with for that. So I don't like that one, but in any case,
he was an inspirational figure.
Yeah, it's so exactly. And I get the sense that to a certain extent, but, you know, obviously this guy was not involved in any sort of decision making or anything. He was just kind of there to like hang out with the guys when they came out. And I get the same sense about like, this is exactly what this other thing, you know, sounds like to me with Benowitz, is just that, like, you know, he's out there, he's like, oh, he's super into this stuff. He really wants to know what's going on with the military and all this stuff. And some guy's like, okay, we can't let Benowitz like really get close to like any of the actual fucking like top secret projects we have going on here that we're developing in the Cold War to like try to defeat the fuck, you know, it's all nuclear related, you know, to try to get a fucking nuclear edge over the goddamn Russians, Soviets. We can't let him get anywhere near that. So what if we just cook up a bunch of fucking malarkey about like, you know, a fucking layer cake base underground and just like send him on a fucking, you know, just wild goose chase until he ultimately loses his mind.
They do that. This has been well documented throughout time. Disinformation agents are real, and they do. It's traditionally what they just did. It seems Benowitz was on to something with seeing these lights and seeing things around Kirtland Air Force Base, and they wanted to get him off the hunt. They wanted to throw him off the scent. And then in comes Myrna, and then in comes these agents saying, hey man, what about this crazy shit under Dulce, man? You know, but the whole thing that throws this whole wrench in the gears is this is the theory. The disinformation theory is all, I guess, predicated on the fact or supposed fact that the base isn't real. And this is the only theory where it shows up in that way, because everyone else that we're going to talk about claims that it is real. And this one fellow that I'm going to get into next has actually been down there. But in the Benowitz story, he claimed it was real. He never saw it. But then these different disinformation agents are saying it wasn't real. We just, you know, we're making shit up. So who do you believe, you know?
Well, so my question is, I mean, was Benowitz the first guy to bring this to public consciousness?
Yes. That, from what I understand, he was the first person to bring it up publicly and to the Air Force. Like, he was actually like presenting them with his research and his investigation, his findings, like, hey man, what's up with this stuff? And that's when apparently the disinformation started, because he was actively, I don't know exactly what his job was necessarily, but he was definitely bugging the Air Force a lot, you know, just, hey, check out my shit, you know? And then they were right. Like, eh.
So, I mean, no. it kind of stands to, and like, this is, I always love to play the contrarian and skeptical, side of this. I mean, it sounds to me like, this essentially there's a probable, it's possible, and even probable that, this was a psyop created just maybe even on a fucking lark by some sort of intelligence officer, from probably the Air Force, based out in, you know, the Four Corners, you know, desert there, which is well known, you know, militarized, you know, test site, whatever. And, you know, probably, you know, Air Force or Naval Intelligence, who just said, fuck, here's this fanboy that we're gonna, you know, let's just spin him a tail and whatever. And that if that's the genesis for all of this, that we first hear about this via Benevitz, it's possible that all further, you know, everything else that we've heard about since, and just looking at this like historiologically, everything that we've heard about since may just be an elaboration upon that initial delusion that was created by the government.
I've had that thought. And it just gets interesting because, you know, we're going to get into the war and the battle that happened, but the Benevitz wasn't privy to the war. Like, he didn't even talk about the war, from what I understand. He just talked about the base and its existence, but he wasn't at the battle. He wasn't a part of the battle. As far as I know, he didn't really mention the battle, but he started getting the attention of people like Linda Moulton Howe and John Lear, who is a famous, you know, ufologist amongst other things. But, I mean, John Lear even seems to have evidence that this base exists. So, hey, I don't know, man. As with anything, it could be true, it could not be true. But if it is all people making shit up based on the initial lie told to Paul Benevitz to get him off of their asses about other shit, then so be it. I don't really fucking know. But hey, definitely could be true, you know. Like, even APRO Bulletin. I love the APRO Bulletin. I talk about the APRO Bulletin in my intro. I read another story from the APRO Bulletin. They even investigated Benevitz's claims in 1982, and they kind of came away with it like, eh, because he was like a contributor to APRO. But they were
what's APRO again?
It's the the APRO Bulletin is Jim and Coral Lorenzen's newsletter that they used to have for decades. It's the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, is what APRO stands for. But but they were based in Arizona, and they would just investigate everything, like on site, any story. It's the greatest collection of articles about any occurrence from like basically the 50s into the 80s. Mm-hmm. But they kind of like looked into Benevitz's claims on this one and were like,
Well, so here's what interests me, like, is now like looking at this, like, sort of historiologically is, you know, from my skeptical perspective, looking at like sort of the genesis of this as potentially being, as we said, like the contact between like some sort of intelligence officer and this, you know, weirdo. And we've sort of, you know, you can kind of obviously then sort of trace the story into the future by saying, you know, like, whoa, what are all these subsequent sort of, evolutions of this story and mythology right from there. But what interests me is you mentioned earlier that there is reason to believe, or some people believe, that this underground base and this contact and this sort of military or political sort of relationship pre-exists 19 whatever, the late 60s or whatever, even by hundreds of years. You sort of mentioned that there earlier that there's a potential like prehistory of all this, and I knew nothing about any of that.
Perfect segue, because we can get away from all the mendacious folks that have been providing all the disinformation to Paul Benevitz.
Is mendacious the word of the day? Why did you honk?
It's the new word of the night.
Oh, sick.
Mendacious.
I love it.
It's a bunch of liars, Matt. Mm-hmm. But this guy, the next guy I want to talk about.
Hate us some mendacity.
Phil Schneider is the next fella I want to talk about. He has a different.
Fred Schneider?
Phil.
Fred?
Phil.
Fred.
He was
actually... I got me a car. It fits about 20. Fred? So come along and bring your jukebox money.
Nice B-52s.
Yeah, Fred Schneider. Right.
Fred Schneider.
Fred Schneider bit's over. Sorry, go ahead.
So Phil Schneider has a bit of a different take.
Spectre?
Yeah, that's a completely different story. So I watched this little video, and I didn't get too deep. I feel like Phil Schneider, you can get real deep with what he's got to say. But I watched this YouTube video from a conference. It was the Preparedness Expo from 1995. And I don't know exactly when he started coming out with this information. But this is what he claims, all right? This is Phil Schneider's story. And this shit is very similar to Bill Cooper. Now we're going to get into the actual battle. We're going to get into someone who was actually claims to have been there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Benevitz is saying there's a fucking base down there. There's a bunch of aliens. There's humans. The government's a part of it. And then he went crazy. Schneider's like, all right, there's some crazy shit going on down there. And this is what he thinks. So late August 1979, he was hired. He's part of the crew to drill 2 miles down into the, you know, Earth surface here.
Sure, crust.
Man. So he says that their equipment kept breaking, so they had to send down people to see what the fuck was going on, and that's when they discovered that there were grays living down there.
His
whole thing is the base was already there, but the government did not tell them when they were drilling 2 miles into the earth that they were down there. So yeah, he's super pissed at the government for lying to them and not giving them all the information, because shit got crazy. And this is where in the video he speculates that they've been there for 400 to 500 years. That's his words. He doesn't go into any details, but he thinks that they have been down there for a very long time. And he noticed on the work site that green berets and black berets were already there, and it made him suspicious. There's like these highly trained military folks kind of just skirting around on the scene. Mm-hmm. So he claims that they drilled holes right into their lair, basically. Like they exposed the grays in their base. And he said
they drank their milkshake.
Yeah. He says he pissed right in their Cheerios is what he did. And he said that the stinky air, like the air that came up from the hole, there, he said there was soot came up. It was so gross. He says it was so fucking gross. And it smelled worse. This is a quote: worse than the worst garbage you could imagine. So don't even try to imagine it, Matt, because you're not even going to imagine a smell this bad.
All yeah, because right? And my garbage is usually not even that putrid. So like, I'm not even that.
You're not familiar with stinky garbage.
No, like not I can't even get into this realm of stench.
Well, it's outer worldly.
Interworldly, honestly.
Unintended.
Well, it's, you know, I feel like that's a little bit, you know, racist, you know? Or if we're talking about different, I mean, species, I guess, what would that be? I don't know. But I feel like it's a little bit like, you know, shitty culturally or whatever on the fucking grays or whoever, because like, they say, oh, it's terrible how they smelled, because honestly, like, it would make sense that we would have completely different palates as different species.
Yeah, they don't stink, so, like, to themselves, of course not.
Right. So fuck off. Like, that's your perception as a human, like, burrowing into the place that they've been for 400 or 500 years. Fuck you. Who are you?
Exactly.
Who are you? Why are you showing up all of a sudden?
Yeah.
We've been here for 400 to 500 years, just like in our own smell. You guys fucking pee you. You guys stink. And you can keep your can keep your fucking blankets, okay?
Yeah, definitely keep your blankets. But this is a thing. Because blankets and air, I mean, and this might be why it smells so bad, or is why it smells so bad. Earth air, and obviously human interaction is bad for them. It gets them sick. That's why, yes, keep your blankets on the surface. Keep yourself on the surface. Keep your fucking air on the surface, because it is bad for them. That's, you know, they're in a contained environment. There is no ventilation. They're keeping the fucking air out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So who knows what I imagine it's humid down there. It's,
well, would we, but would we not
pretty stinky, pretty gross. But,
so then is the presumption then that these grays who live underground, is the presumption then that they are a terrestrial species?
No.
Or, okay. So then are we talking,
maybe on their own planet. I don't know, but go ahead.
No. Well, so the question is, is this a terrestrial species? Are these Morlocks, or are these an extraterrestrial species who have colonized our, you know, somehow underground layer? Like, does it dovetail with like the Nazi Hollow Earth mythology, where at the poles there was a gateway into the inner earth, and that's, you know, there's a whole fucking Nazi inner earth rabbit hole that anybody can go down if they want. Does it dovetail with that? Does it dovetail with the like the underground flying saucer bases that we talked about? We talked about Bill Cooper. That's how Bill Cooper became, you know, fucking UFO pilled. he saw the goddamn Tetris piece like rise out of the ocean and tumble around like a goddamn ballerina and shoot off into the sky.
That's right.
And so like, is that what we're talking about, or are we talking about a weird, like, mole people that are from Earth originally?
From what I've read, they are definitely not of this Earth. They are here because they are working with the government. Mm-hmm. They are here. You could say upon invitation.
Okay, but if they were here, so I'm curious about, and I don't mean to put you on the spot as though like you're the person that believes this.
I'm no expert.
To the extent that you know, what is the explanation for them having been here for centuries? Like, how does that come to be? Do we have any insight into that?
Zero insight. It's just this guy. It's just this fleeting thought of this Schneider guy, and maybe he has some writings or something that goes deeper. But if they have been here for centuries, I can only imagine what the politics of that are, if any. Like, maybe they were here and then we discovered them and then we had to work with them, or they just work with humans from the get-go. I really don't fucking know. But when you throw 400 or 500 years, we could go all night talking about how the hell that came about, you know?
Oh, sure, sure. I mean, but, that gets into some of that awesome ancient alien shit, which, to be honest, like, I'm a skeptic, but like, if I were to learn tomorrow that, like, yes, indeed, there had been contact between an extraterrestrials and terrestrials, mm-hmm. it would shock me if it hadn't happened centuries or millennia ago. Because of the amounts of time that would have to elapse, for a society to get to that level to be able to make contact with people in other parts of the galaxy or whatever, that's something that would just statistically have to have happened well in the past.
Oh yeah,
be happening right
now. I mean, these alien species are older than the planet Earth.
Yes,
you know what I mean. So
yeah,
they whenever they found us, who I don't know. I mean, since human life was formed, you know, mm-hmm. But the bases, underground bases, who knows?
Right.
When they were constructed, but this specific one in Dulce, there's no saying exactly when it was built, but Schneider stumbled upon it, and that's when all hell broke loose. This is when the battle started. This intrusion mm-hmm. by this company hired to dig holes 2 miles into the ground, and were not told by a very knowing government that they were
Wackin' Hut. Was this Wackin' Hut, by the way? Sorry,
I don't know anything about a Wackin' Hut.
Okay, sorry, go on. I'm sorry. I'm still trying to piece it all together in my head.
Well, in this point in the story where the soot and the stink is coming out of the fucking hole that they drilled, and Schneider's all pissed off, he says that he went down. This is where it gets into Bill Cooper territory. Phil Schneider says that he went down in a basket. To check the scene out for himself. And this is pretty funny. In the speech, he's at a, you know, he's on stage on the microphone, and he says out loud, he's like, "For me," to this elderly woman in front. That's how he defines the distance, is to call out an elderly lady. I don't know why. Yeah, this guy's kind of rude, this guy.
It was a different time.
1995.
Yeah.
So
that was back when men were men and the elderly were elderly.
He says, "For me, to this elderly woman in front was sitting a 7-foot gray that smelled terrible," he said. So I don't know how he knew he was 7 foot tall when he was sitting, but that's what he saw when he went down in the basket. Was this
must have been a master of geometry?
A stinky 7-foot gray. And this is how it all started, Matt.
Uh-huh.
He says he immediately reached for his pistol. This guy, an engineer, has a pistol. He says
better than a knife. He didn't reach for his knife, did he? He did not reach for his
knife. Certainly did not. He says he had a Walther PPK pistol with a 9-shot clip.
Excuse me, a what? A Walther? PPK? Where is that manufactured?
I have no idea. I'm not
Germany,
a gun person.
In Germany, at least, possibly Bavaria.
I'm not even a gun person. But this is exactly what he said. And apparently it was dark down there and he had to load the clip. That's at least what I kind of gathered. It was not a loaded gun. But he claims to have killed 2 grays with this gun. And then one of the grays waved its hand in front of its chest, and then a blue beam hit Schneider, and he says it quote just literally opened me up like a fish, unquote. And it burned two of his fingers off. He's missing like his index and ring finger on his left hand. Mm-hmm. Or sorry, his index and his middle finger. And he claims this beam of light, I guess, blew them off, right off of him. And he thinks it was electrical in nature because he says it kind of felt like what he would assume it would feel like to get struck by lightning. But then he has these like funny quotes. He says that that it burned all the toenails right off of him. And he says it, quote, completely crispy crittered my left foot. And then, but it also, quote, burnt the shoe right off of me. So I don't know how it burnt the shoe. Yeah, so
I don't know. This sounds like an elaborate explanation for an electrical mishap he had in his backyard.
So so I guess it makes sense. Burned the shoe off of him, burned up his toenails, and burned his foot, just his left foot. So that's pretty violent, pretty gnarly. And he was kind of knocked out, but he said he was conscious, but he doesn't remember much after he got hit with this beam of light here.
Right.
And that's when a heroic Green Beret stepped in, and he says he's forever indebted to this person because he risked his life, and because he put him in the basket. He put Schneider back into the basket, hit the button. So he went back to the surface. And
this basket is controlled by a button.
Apparently. All right. That's what I don't know if he's got a little pickle.
I'm picturing more of like a Wizard of Oz sort of situation.
But this is what he says. He hit the button to get him back to the surface. And that Green Beret ended up dying. As a matter of fact, 66 Secret Service men died.
66 secrets. Say that 10 times fast.
66 Secret Service men.
Just 5 times fast.
66. I can't even do it. Maybe women, but I'm assuming in 1979 it was all men. 66 service men, literally.
It was a bit of a boys' club back then.
Yeah, a bit of a boys' club. And he blames the U.S. government for not telling them about the alien threat before they started digging. So rightfully so, he's fucking pissed.
Wait a second. I have a question. Why are there fucking Secret Servicemen down there? Are these aliens are these aliens counterfeiting fucking dollar bills? Or is the president involved in some
way? This is what Schneider is saying. The government did not tell his company about this base. But before he even went down there, he noticed that there were Green Berets and Black Berets milling about. So he was suspicious. He's like, why are they here? They were there because they knew of the threat that his company did not know about, and they let them drill 2 miles down and disturb the aliens and start this whole war. Because apparently this is the jumping off point, but if you really want to get down to it, Paul Schneider started this whole thing because he's the one that just hauled off and started shooting aliens.
Right.
He just immediately went for his gun. But apparently ever since that day, he claims that the U.S. military, the Russian military, he says all militaries of the world have been in constant conflict down there with the aliens. And he said, this is where he goes on to say the small gray, the large gray, the reptilian. He says there are 11 distinct races of aliens.
Wow.
And I think he's talking about in total.
Right.
Not necessarily. What's down there. But
it's very much like the Men in Black movies, where there are just like several different races that are just kind of like hanging out, and like everybody has a different job.
Yeah, I guess so. But that's as far as I got with the Paul Schneider story and on why this battle started, is because his company drilled down there. The government was not forthright with the knowledge and the truth of what was under the surface. And he acted a fool and pulled his gun out and just started shooting aliens that are there, like I said, kind of upon invitation by the U.S. government.
Yeah, you can't be going down there and like so doing some like Star Wars canteen shit. Mm-hmm. Well, who broke the treaty? I mean,
Paul Schneider did. Unbeknownst,
had the Greys not already broken the treaty though by exceeding the.
Sorry, go
Fred
ahead.
Fred Schneider. I think we Fred Schneider. Had the Greys not already broken the treaty by exceeding the limit of humans that they could abduct?
That's apparently. Schneider knew nothing about that, but he just went about killing them on pure instinct. So
just like pure American fucking just chutzpah.
They're coming right for us, you know. But he says that he believes that there is a very specific numbers.
Yeah.
1,477 underground bases around the world. 129 of them are in the United States. And each one of them cost $17 billion or more. So $17 billion is the minimum cost for one of these. And he says that it's a black budget that is hidden from the U.S. government and from the public. And it garners 25% of the gross national product. And military forces from all over the world are involved and have been fighting these aliens underground basically since 1979.
I mean, that is absolutely, I mean, the perfect entree into like where this stuff gets into like new world order sort of intersectionality. I have to get out of here.
You have to go?
Yeah. I texted you. I have a hard out.
Hard out. Okay. Man, I was just about to get into the good stuff.
Shit. Can we continue this like another time? I have something scheduled with people in New York and Manila at 10:30.
All right. Well, I'll let you go. Maybe I'll just finish the story by myself and call it a night.
All right. I'm sorry, dude. I'm sorry.
It's all good. It's a first, but I expect nothing less.
No, dude, I'm really sorry. I texted you. I thought you got that.
I don't pay attention to anything but the conversation. But before you go.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to say to Rush Limbaugh now that he's actually dead?
Oh, man. It was nice having you as sort of like an adversary, you know, sort of like a stand in for, you know, all the like, you know, racist and like, you know, just regressive, silly fucking like, transgressive, shitty behavior that, everybody, growing up in the suburbs or whatever, basically, inflicts on everybody else around them and, and obviously on a class level, but it was nice, being able to personify that in one person and, I'm going to miss that, but I'll find somebody else.
Somebody's going to come along. They have to.
Yeah, I'll be all right.
Just as long as you're all right, Matt, that's all good.
That's how I live my life. No, I'm kidding.
Obviously, Matt. All right, we'll see you later.
Hey, Jason, thank you very much. To be continued.
TBD. Well, TBD, right. TBC.
To be rad.
TBD on the TBC. And yeah, TBR.
TTBT.
All right, man. Well, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jason. No worries. I look forward to the next one.
Yeah, man. We'll talk about it and we'll get it done.
All right, man.
All right. Later, man. All right.
See ya.
Bye. Okay, I'm just going to keep going. I didn't stop. I didn't stop the recording. This is all live. I really don't feel like recording later, so I'm just going to continue this story. I honestly had no idea he had to leave early. So where to go from there? Let me just say that Phil Schneider ended up hanging himself with his own catheter. That's a good place to just start or end the Phil Schneider story and start this solo end to the episode. He killed himself in Wilsonville, Oregon, which is very close to where I live right now in Portland. But of course, there's conspiracy theories around his death. Some folks think he was murdered because, hey, he knows too much about the alien base under Dulce. So if he is correct, there's alien battles possibly happening. I mean, definitely happening right now. Underground, all over the world. There's just secret black ops style wars and battles just constantly going on. And he might have started it all. But let me get into just a little bit. I'll make it pretty quick. I read this crazy article, and it was the longest one that I read, and the most in-depth. Like, it was this Japanese site that I found, and it's a weird website. So I'm not going to say what it is out loud because it's too weird of a website name. It's not like a normal website name, but I'll post a link to it. But it's the Dulce Battle Report is what it's called, apparently edited by Captain Mark Richards, who was there. And believe it or not, it was condensed and re-edited by Branton, who is the author of the Dulce Wars book, and it was published by the Earth Defense Headquarters. And apparently this is a super condensed version, it says on the website, of the Dulce Battle Report. Apparently it's a 166 page book about what happened. But the theory of why this battle even happened in the first place is way darker than what we've already talked about. Apparently, yes, there was a treaty, but it gets really dark. And this is kind of a trigger warning. This is all bad stuff for folks who don't like dark turns. Apparently, thousands of young human females were down there in the 7 level base, and they were basically sex slaves for the Greys. And there were experiments going on, a lot of research conducted on them, and they started to create in test tubes human women, like clone women. And it's all just like really gnarly, nasty stuff. And they were trying, they didn't like the clone versions of the women, so they preferred real women. And apparently it was predominantly about 100% white women is what this article says. So they bumped up the abduction program. Like, the numbers went up. So they, in 1980, they began to increase to over 100,000 a year. And there were long-term victims who would stay there basically their whole life, apparently. Shit like this was, I guess, the reason why the battle went down. This really evil, dark, basically sex slave, human abductee sex slave ring was going on underground, and people got fed up with it. and they went over the government's head. And it was this crazy black ops style attack on the base where they found an opening where the ships would come and go. And they used experimental aircraft to get in there and start this attack. And they went in there and saved a bunch of women. That is the theory. This other theory of the battle and how it all started and why it happened and what went down there. And there is very specific, a lot of names, a lot of supporters, people who led different groups. I mean, the name of the craft that they used was the X-22. That was the craft that went down there and like crashed, basically, not crashed, but you know, went down first and opened up the whole battle, and then everyone kind of started flowing in there. And the guy Mark Richards was the man who flew this X-22 and started the whole attack. And yeah, I mean, imagine that shit. So this was a covert operation. Instead of just stumbling on the alien base, like Phil Schneider said, it was a planned attack to save a bunch of women's lives, to get them the fuck out of there, because these grays were just, yeah, out of control. They were just out of fucking control. I'll post a link to this whole like abridged version of this article. There are so many names and so many details that it's like, it's mind-boggling. I mean, it seems real because it's so in-depth, and it does make you think, like, if someone's making this stuff up, they go above and beyond to make it as authentic as possible. But Dulce, man, Dulce, New Mexico, if this is all happening under the surface, or had happened under the surface, that's wild. And it could explain all the lights you're seeing, and it could explain all the sounds you're hearing. Who knows? But there seems, like I said, depending on who you're talking to, there is any manner of thing happening under the soil in your town or around your town. I really, really hope this last story that I told is absolutely not true. But like I said, this report is very thorough. But that's it, man. That's fucking crazy. I can't really talk about it too much more. I don't have anyone to talk to. So I guess that's it for the night, folks. That's the Dulce battle, the Dulce wars. I'd love to know what you think, or if you have any opinions, because the theories kind of run the gamut here. It's a human alien base. There, everyone's in cahoots. Everyone gets along. There's treaties involved. The Air Force is trying to get people off of the scent of, well, I guess the Air Force has created disinformation programs essentially to get people off the scent of other, I'm assuming, legit projects, and they created the Dulce base and it's not real, or it is 100% real and Phil Schneider started the war by shooting two grays and being pissed at the government for not telling his company what was going on, or it was a very planned attack on the base to save thousands and thousands. I'm talking tens of thousands of women from slavery, from the grays that were doing horrible things to them. those are the theories that I've read, and it could be any of them, or it could be none of them. I don't know. I would love to hear your opinion on it. I don't know which one to believe, but they're all fucking crazy. And I mean, you want to believe that it's real, but honestly, this is kind of a freaky one. You know, I prefer it not be real if it's going to be as violent as it is. Kind of scary, because the whole idea is once they can acclimate to Earth in the atmosphere, because there is a theory out there that global warming is very intentional to get the environment ready for them to be able to survive, and so they can come to the surface and basically take over. So chew on that. I hope that's not real either, but man, that'd be wild. But yeah, let me know what you think. This is a crazy one, a fun one, honestly. Took a dark turn there. But thank you all for listening. I'm just going to go right into the outro here. Kind of thrown for a loop tonight. But thank you, Matt, for being here. And yeah, man, write me, lostrhetoricpodcast@gmail.com. Instagram at Lost Rhetoric Podcast. Send me a message there. Check out the Spotify playlist. Just look up LR038. You can find all the bands that I mentioned. Well, not all of them, but most of them on that playlist. And that's it for the week, man. I will see you next week. Got another good show lined up for you. And until then, please, everyone, stay sane and stay safe.